Welcome to Yada Yada Radio. My pleasure to be with you. It's Yom Kippurim for those of us who are timing Yahweh's calendar based upon the first sliver of new light on a renewing moon in the seventh month. Those who want to make absolutely certain they can observe the light increasing on the surface of the moon, maybe celebrating it tomorrow. Either way is just fine with Yahweh. He did not give us precise instructions on the timing, but he gave us very precise instructions on the nature of this day and its purpose. Hello, Larry. How are you?
I'm doing good. I've got lamb going. I just ate some of it. It's quite good.
Good. I think we have James here as well. How are you, James?
I'm doing good. Almost didn't make it, but I got here.
Yeah, I saw that. I mentioned in the chat room that I've been part of a diet. I think we do have a responsibility to take care of the bodies that we were given, and I let mine get a little frumpy around the edges, and have been working on that. I shared that with Larry three or four shows ago, but have now lost 25 pounds over the last 25 pounds down over the 7 weeks. But more important than that is the redistribution. What was fat is now muscle. What was around my stomach is now around my chest and upper arm. So, you know, it's a pretty strict diet. I consume less than 1,000 calories a day. I'm very careful that I'm not consuming processed foods, fats, alcohols, desserts, anything of that nature. So I'm pretty disciplined in my fruits, vegetables, nuts, and lean proteins. I think it's made a pretty good difference, and I'm working out between 1 and 3 hours a day. So it's it's been a real
a lot of working out. Are you using coconut oil?
A little bit of coconut oil, not a lot, but a little bit of coconut oil. I take a little bit of the apple cider vinegar, and I think that's probably helpful. Somebody mentioned Garcinia, which is the new touted miracle drug. I occasionally I'll take one of those tablets. I did read the studies on it, and the studies on it show that it's equally helpful to a placebo. There isn't a single study yet that shows that it has any benefit beyond.
Never heard of it.
First placebo effect. Yeah, it's the skin of a fruit of a fairly uncommon fruit that is supposed to suppress appetite and help you through the process, but. You know, for the most part, I think it's you consume fewer calories, you eat better calories, and you exercise if you want to lose weight. And
there you go.
Pretty much stick to it. I don't think much of a miracle here. It's really a matter of discipline. Do you want to do it badly enough? And I'm going to be celebrating my 30th anniversary with my bride in the first week of November. And my gift to her was to be the same weight that I was when we were married 30 years ago. Another 15 pounds, I'll get there. At this point, Larry, I'm not sure I'm going to get to the same weight because I've put on a lot of muscle, and I think I may get to the same pant size. But
then that's all that matters.
I think that's really is all that's going to matter. I really have put on a lot of muscle in the exercise program.
Feels
the other thing
good,
I mentioned. Pardon?
Feels good, too.
Oh, it feels so much
good.
Yeah, it really does feel good. And the stiffness that I have now from time to time over this, the whole thing, is really a good feeling. It's a good burn as opposed to the original one, which is painful. So, it feels great.
You get to where it's hard to even hurt. I mean, you have to really work at it to feel the pain.
And, you know, I've kind of gone to the point where I do I go at it each body part kind of twice. I do a whole series of upper and lower body workout that's mostly low resistance, high reps, very aerobic, tone muscles, and they improve the cardiovascular system and burn calories, you know, highly aerobic, long periods of time, low resistance. And then I work in a second set, both of everything upper and lower body, that is very few reps, maximum resistance that I can tolerate, which is a strengthening regimen. So, you know, it's trying to do the right thing. We'll see how it all turns out. But now that I've confessed here, you all are going to hold me accountable so that by the first week of November, I'm looking pretty for my wife.
You're almost there.
Yeah.
Yeah, well.
Other thing I mentioned in the chat room before we began the program today is that I am getting a lot of really bad email. Man, am I ever? I don't
really?
Know whatever tripped the trigger of folks out there, but man, I mean, just off the wall nutcases that are so self-righteous. And they're so deluded, and their approach is so thin, so idiotic, so insane, and it's, you don't really know what to do. I'm thinking that the best thing to do now is, for the most part, just stop reading email. You know, just stop reading it, stop answering it, and because it's so depressing when you get this stuff. I mean, the last two that I received just before the show. One was from a fellow that said that a rabbi was the highly credentialed, most highly credentialed Jewish scholar maybe of all time, and that Abu Bakr, who was the dad of Aisha, the six-year-old that he gave to his pal Muhammad when he was 50 years old to have sex with, and he was the first to follow in Muhammad's footsteps, led the war of compulsion, and armed the viciousness of the Islamic war machine, that he was actually, like this fellow who he was citing, was a Jewish rabbi. Yep. That Islam was actually founded by a Jewish rabbi, and that this credentialed scholar proved that that Abu Bakr was a Jewish rabbi. And I just said, come on, that's insane. And the response that I got was a foul-mouthed rant. And then the last one that I received is a woman who says, you know, the date setters have all got in real trouble, and even Jesus said that no one knows the time, only the Father.
Yeah, he is the Father, don't
he? Come on. You just shake your head, and you say...
Well, I got one that'll top both of them. Ready for this?
Pardon?
Somebody
yep.
threw me into a group called yep. Real Christians.
Oh, okay.
And yeah, and I went into the Real Christians group, which is something I don't like to do anymore.
Yep.
You know, it's one of those things where they got to yep. approach me. I'm not approaching them. I just made a couple posts in there and left.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And a woman said, so you're for Yahweh, not Jesus. Jesus
wow.
will defeat
yep.
Yahweh. Jesus will defeat Yahweh.
Okay. Wow.
I said,
yeah,
well, you're pretty delusional and weird. And I yeah. said, that's why I don't grow to groups like you. I said, you don't know that his name was Yahusha, and that means Yahweh saves. And that tells you what you ought to know, because he's the diminished manifestation of Yahweh. And, yeah, they just couldn't get that. And, of course,
no.
they didn't even have Yahweh. They were going WHVH. They're
oh,
probably
yeah.
using a vowel pointing system, no
yeah.
less.
Yeah, and your
job.
Point is correct. For Yosha, not to know something the Father knows is to say that Yosha wasn't a set-apart manifestation of the Father. And so
right.
if Luke's testimony, and he wasn't there and he wasn't an eyewitness and it's purely hearsay, is accurate, you can just throw the whole thing away. Because he couldn't
you know.
Have been who he said he was. And then the next part was that you know you're way over the top and absolutely crazy as it comes to your comments on Paul. You ought to read somebody else's book who is much better educated than you are on the nature of Paul. Yeah, and of course if I'm wrong on Paul, then so is God.
Yeah, well, castration is pretty clear. You know,
yeah.
on P46. Anybody under the Torah should be castrated. I mean, what
yeah.
part of that is out on a limb? You know?
Yeah. Well, when Yahweh said that Shaul was the plague of death, and then he not only named him by name, but gave us every possible insight into his nature and timing. I'm going to guess that God knows what he's talking about. I think that if your position is consistent with Yahweh's, that you've got a high probability of being correct.
Well, you know what they say, don't you? Don't let the bastards get you down. And that's the best advice in this.
Yeah, it's I think the best advice is just to ignore them. All right, we're going to go over some ground for those of you who listened to Shattering Myths this morning. We're going to go over some of the ground we covered there, but in vastly less detail to begin, because I'd like to go beyond where we were in that program after we've gotten through the introductory verses for the celebration of Yom Kippurim. It begins in Korah 23, 26, and 27. Then Yahweh declared the word to Moshe, saying, now, just think of that for a moment. I mean, it doesn't say, then Yahweh said to Moshe. It said, then Yahweh declared the word. So if you're looking for the word of God, wouldn't you look to this text? I mean, God, he's saying this is his word. I mean, for him to go out of the way to say he declared the word to Moshe, saying, he's trying to tell you something here. That we're reading from Korah, which is the heart of the Torah, is his word. So Yahweh declared the word to Moshe. And I think that's important. He spoke this directly to the children of Israel, and while that's important, Yahweh much prefers to work through people, work with people. He created people for that entire purpose, to engage with us. So he is sharing his testimony through Moshe, a name which means to draw out, a person that he engaged to draw all of us out of the crucible of Mitzrayim, which is human, political, and religious schemes. Now he says, on the 10th of the seventh month. 10th is one of my favorite Hebrew words. It's asor. It's from asar, and it means to enrich, which is the whole purpose of this, of being reconciled unto Yahweh. He wants to enrich his children. Of the seventh, make no mistake, this is the seventh month for a reason. It's from Shabbat, which means promise, and it's the promise of seven. You know, if you want to know God's plan and his timing, rather than fixate on a book called the Christian New Testament, ignorant of the fact that the covenant has not been renewed, ignorant of the fact that half of it was written by a man who claimed to be demon-possessed, written by a man who had admitted that he was insane, written by a man who's overtly opposed to everything Yahweh says, that rather than looking there and taking one line out of context, you may want to consider the merit of 6 plus 1 equals 7 and how that plan plays out through creation, through the establishment of the Shabbat, through the 7 Moed Mikre, of which we're celebrating the 6th of 7, and throughout the 7 millennia of time that have transpired since 6 of them now have transpired from the time that Adam and Shaul were booted out of the garden to the time that that Yahweh will return. It isn't difficult. It just takes an open mind and a little study. And Kodesh, Larry, it's probably one of your favorite Hebrew words, certainly one of my favorite words, time of renewal. So this is about renewal.
Yeah.
Pardon?
A set-apart day.
Yeah, it's a set-apart day. Is the day of reconciliations, Kippurim. It means of pardoning, of forgiveness, to reconcile the relationship. So that tells you most of everything you need to know. This day is about renewal. This day is part of his plan of seven, a promise that he has made to us about 6 plus 1 equals 7. This day is about being enriched. This day is about being drawn out. This day is declared in his word. This is from Yahweh. It is about reconciling our relationship. Now, I don't think I had to extrapolate much to get that out of those words. Now, I don't know how you come up with a fast based on those words, but nonetheless, religious individuals have managed to turn it into a fast. He says
right.
This exists as, the word there is Hayah. It's one of Yahweh's favorite words because it's the basis of his name. That means this was, this is, this will be. You mentioned this already, Larry. You were a bit premature, but absolutely accurate. This was, is, and always will be a set apart Kodesh invitation to be called out and to meet. If you're going to meet somebody and you are estranged from them, doesn't it make sense that you would call that meeting a reconciliation?
Yeah.
Makes sense to me.
It makes sense to me. Yeah.
Yeah. Particularly if you're preceding this day with other days that prepare us to be reconciled, like Pesach, Matzah, Bukurim, and Shavua. So this day is an invitation to be called out and to meet, and it is a set-apart day in that regard. It is a mikra. And a mikra is not a convocation. It's most certainly not a holy convocation. I don't even know what a convocation is. But I'm assuming that a convocation is a really big meeting of a bunch of pompous people that just can't call it a meeting. I guess
sounds like a religious get-together.
That's what comes to my mind.
Yeah, if you call it, we're going to have a convocation now. It sounds like you are the headmaster of a religious school. Yahweh is not a headmaster. His school is not religious. And he uses pretty simple terms. Mikra is based on kara. Kara is one of the most common Hebrew verbs. It means to read, to recite, to meet, to welcome, to invite, and to summon, to call out. I don't know if there's any one of those concepts that is anything but essential to Yahweh's reconciling his relationship with us. You aren't going to find yourself reconciled unto Yahweh unless you are called out of this world, unless you read and you recite his word.
Unless you've called out and invited him to your party that you're having right now.
Yeah.
As well.
Or better yet, just answer and respond to the invitation he has made to his party.
Yeah, there
it's
you
his
go.
Party, but it's his party for us. So in a very real way, it's our party too. He said it's for us. And so every aspect of this, to be called out, to be invited, to meet, to read, to recite, to encounter. And then it's la atem, concerning us, for us to approach. Powerful. So this is Yom Kippurim. It's a day of reconciliations. It's an invitation to be called out and to meet for us, and it exists for all time as a day that is set apart. And I know an individual who is set apart that is really important to us. She is the set apart spirit. This day is set apart. All right, then Yahweh says something that is always mistranslated. And you know, since I have gone through guys so many times explaining what I consider to be the proper perspective and attitude to engage in a translation, I'm not going to justify this translation. I am simply going to say that I think that every translation of Yahweh's word ought to first begin with a knowledge of who Yahweh is. Second, it ought to respect Yahweh's nature. Third, it ought to accurately and consistently convey Yahweh's will and offer. And fourth, it ought to be consistent with the way that the words are used, particularly in their first use, throughout his testimony. Fifth, it should fit the context. We're talking about here a day to be welcomed into Yahweh's company whereby our relationship is reconciled. So that being the case, and that it is set apart, I'm going to say that using that strategy, which is the strategy that I deploy. I don't claim to have any credentials, but I do know Yahweh. I do love Yahweh. I do understand what he's offering. And based upon those things, this is what he said. Now, if you want to render these words differently, and you can justify it, have at it. And your soul should respond and answer. Now, this is an invitation. That makes perfect sense. And your soul, this is a day about being reconciled. When we are reconciled with Yahweh, when we camp out with him for all time, it's not our physical bodies, it's our soul. And your soul should respond and answer, appearing before and approaching the feminine manifestation of the light, the adoptive mother who enlightens and elevates, to approach Yahweh. Absolutely consistent with the primary meaning of the words, absolutely consistent with the context, absolutely consistent with Yahweh's nature, absolutely consistent with the day of reconciliations. And your soul should respond and answer, appearing before and approaching, coming near, the feminine manifestation of the light, to approach Yahweh. Do you think that anybody here think that they're perfect enough that without being enveloped in Yahweh's set-apart spirit's garment of light, that they're going to be able to enter Yahweh's presence all jubilant and excited and walk up there for a big hug?
Nobody I know.
Yeah, nobody I know. Certainly not me. I am really happy to have the best apparel that can be provided in the universe. And I would recommend that apparel for everyone. And it is the way. It's by coming into the presence of the feminine manifestation of Yahweh's light that we are adorned in light and become perfect in Yahweh's eyes, which means that we can saunter right up to the creator of the universe as his kid. Perfect.
You know, this now, has to be, like, the English translation of this has to rank as the number one worst mistranslation in history.
Yeah, I think so.
It is the most egregious
mistranslation. Well, that would really be a mouthful. That would be a mouthful. No,
I think
say?
He's right. I think he's right.
Well,
I would say that the corruption of this invitation is probably the worst. You know,
come
first
walk
of all,
up
they
afflicting
they
yourself and
yeah. For, first of all, they begin it with yourself as opposed to your soul. They come. You won't find an English translation that references the soul, and yet it's the soul that tells us all about this day. You know, this is not about
right
us physically doing something. This is about our souls, which is our ability to observe and respond. That's the part of us that's enveloped in Yahweh's garment of light that will spend eternity as part of Yahweh's family camping out with him. It's our soul that's the focus of this. And you won't find, I don't think there is an English translation that recognizes the use of soul here, nefesh.
I'm looking at the King James translation, and it says, ye shall afflict your soul. And offer an offering made by fire unto the Lord.
Okay. So it's the one that uses soul. But how would you afflict a soul?
Yeah. And how does fasting afflict your soul?
You know, to afflict is a physical action where you're harming something. How do you afflict your soul? I can see how you could afflict. I mean, stupid. But I can see how you would afflict
your soul. You can afflict your soul by becoming religious. Being religious afflicts your soul.
Yeah, it would
that would put you right in line there with them.
Yeah,
JB.
It would debase it. Yeah, it would certainly debase it.
Sure.
So, and your soul should respond and answer. Anna. Anna's primary meaning is to respond. Anna's secondary meaning is to answer. It's to reply. It's to make a declaration. It's to engage in thought. It's to verbally communicate. You have to get to the 11th, 12th, or 13th definition of Anna before you get to afflict. And by the time that you've skipped over all of the appropriate definitions of Anah, in the context of a day of reconciliations, and in the context of God giving us an invitation, and you skip over, respond and answer. I mean, I don't know how you skip over. I'm inviting you to a day of reconciliation, and you skip over respond and answer, which are the primary definitions of a na, to get to something that is absolutely egregious in the midst of this. I'm astounded that the first religious moron came up with it, and that people have followed thoughtlessly in that individual's footsteps.
You know, Craig, me and you had a fight recently, and, yeah, I'm willing to forgive you, but first I need you to spend a whole day afflicting yourself, and then I'll forgive you. Then we'll be good again.
Yeah. Try that with a son or daughter. Tell your son or daughter that you know, the only way that I'm going to reconcile my relationship with you is if you do something really horrid to yourself. And then you'd expect your son or daughter to say, so why is it that I want to reconcile my relationship with somebody that twisted?
Then the next thing they do.
It goes back to being the whole idea of the state of sadistic God that religions have.
Yeah, always.
The sadistic God wants to see you suffer for him.
Right. I don't know why. I mean, why would you even want to have a relationship with a God that wants you to suffer? Then the next is
don't
this
burn in hell.
Yeah, this karab, which means to appear before, to approach. That's its primary definition. In fact, it doesn't even have any definitions other than appear before and approach. But unfortunately, if you're going to make this your affliction, you providing a burnt offering, if that's how you're going to afflict yourself, then you have to ignore the meaning of karab. I mean, with karab, you don't have a lot of choices. Karab only means to approach, to appear before. That's all it means. And so you have to completely ignore its meaning. And then you get to isha, which is the feminine version of the Hebrew word for fire. It's also the Hebrew word for woman, wife, and an adoptive mother. And Yahweh goes out of his way to define Isha, the feminine manifestation of his light, as the set-apart spirit the first time he uses the word. This is not hard, and there is no way to get burnt offering out of the word. There's no burnt, and there's no offering associated with Isha. It's if you're going to go in that direction, you're ignoring what the words mean. I shared this this morning, but I'm partial to the statement because I have found, without exception, that Yahweh always defines his terms in their first use. And here is his definition of Isha, and you tell me if it can be anything other than the set-apart spirit. He says, burn, katar. So, obviously, if there's a perfectly good word for burn and it's katar, then it certainly isn't going to be Isha. Burn, katar, the entire lamb, the Eyel, on the altar. It rises up, Olah, toward Yahweh, as the spirit of soothing acceptance, Reach from Ruach. The adoptive mother who purifies, the feminine manifestation of the light, serves as a counselor, conciliating and reconciling us to approach Yahweh. I mean, there is not much wiggle room there. The Isha is the feminine manifestation of Yahweh's light. It's the set-apart spirit. It's our spiritual mother. And she acts as a counselor, reconciling our relationship with Yahweh. She is the soothing spirit of acceptance. And your soul should respond, appearing before and approaching the adoptive mother who purifies and enlightens the feminine manifestation of the light, elevating you to approach Yahweh. Now, on this day, beginning, say, well, this year, Yom Kippurim, for those of us who use the astronomical accounting, where so long as light is renewing on the moon's surface at more than 1% prior to the sunset, we'll count that as the first day, and then we're 10 days later from that. For those of us who use that technique to determine the micrae, then this day, as would happen on average every 7 years, on average, not every seventh year, but certainly on average, actually falls on a natural Shabbat. But even if it didn't, it's to be treated as if it were a Shabbat. So the instructions regarding the Shabbat apply to the Day of Reconciliations. Now, the reason that this is particularly important is that in the concept and the idea of us answering an invitation to meet with God, that obviously is acceptable as something we can do on this day. But if we're beating ourselves, if we're afflicting ourselves, that is completely incompatible with the teaching that Yahweh has provided regarding the Shabbat. All right, so it says, do not perform a shah. Do not engage in, act upon, any of the service of the heavenly messenger, the malacha, on this life-sustaining and empowering, this essential Ishim day. Indeed, this is the day of reconciliations for you to be pardoned and forgiven, kafar, in the presence of Yahweh. And just in case you were lazy, and you know it happens, you know, I've been lazy from time to time, and you were trying to deal with Yom Kippurim, and you just decided, you know, I'm just going to use the old Jewish term, the rabbinical term, Yom Kippur. And I'm just going to call it Yom Kippur. I'm not going to bother to think about what it means. And then I have some religious guy say, well, it's the Day of Atonement. And to atone means, you know, to, it's like, when you're atoning, it's kind of like you're repenting, right? It's, oh, man, I've been a bad boy. Let me make an extra contribution to the cause. Let me feel really bad about something I've done. Let me apologize. Let me wallow in it some. What else would atone mean? Right?
And then, well, they run around literally talking about, you know, if I've offended you in this last year, I want you to, I truly am sorry and blah, 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 you know.
Yeah, except the following day I'll offend you some more.
Well, yeah, pretty much.
So, if you're into religious garbage, and you just say, well, it's the Day of Atonement. Well, first of all, if it's atonement, why did Yahweh choose kafar as the basis of kaputim? I mean, kafar means to reconcile, to release from guilt, to annul all offenses. I mean, that sounds like you're exonerated on this day, right? That sounds like your relationship is reconciled because you've been declared innocent, not guilty, and all of your offenses have been annulled. What happens when you're enveloped in the spirit of light, the Yahweh's set-apart spirit of light?
You're perfect.
So you look perfect. So if you got any offenses, they're gone. They're obliterated.
They're not even seen.
They're not remembered. So it's the day of pardons and forgiveness. Kafar is the basis of Kippur. And so he's telling us that this day is about kafar. Hey, God's really good about that. I mean, first time he brings up Torah, he tells us that Torah is based on Yara. And Yara means to teach, to instruct, to guide, and to direct. Okay, then Torah must mean source of teaching, guidance, instruction, and directions. I mean, if you're open-minded, as much as maybe we would like to say, wow, you know, aren't we fortunate here that we have these wonderful insights into Yahweh's testimony? And we are fortunate. But is it because we're especially smart? No. God really makes this simple.
By the way, you know, during the entire narrative, as we know, all the Moed Mikra literally played out in human history. And in the entire narrative, the narrative of the fulfillment of Kippurim, the only person inflicting any damage is the enemy. And furthermore, you know, they're not doing it to themselves. And, and furthermore, he points out, and I find this very strange, and I think this was in direct opposition, and maybe that's why you put it in there in Zechariah, probably, but it's in direct opposition to the idea of fasting. In Zechariah, when he's going through that, he says, moreover, Yehuda will eat food in Jerusalem. Now, it's on that day. It's on Kippurim.
Yeah.
Obviously,
it's on the essential day. Right.
Yeah.
I know.
I think he put that in there in direct opposition when he was doing the narrative on the fulfillment.
I agree.
And that's the most explicit narrative, I think.
When Yahusha is telling the story of the prodigal son, and the relationship between father and son is reconciled, and the son comes home, does the father say, great, let's protect all of the livestock, because the last thing we want to do is to have a meal on this day. Let's have a somber fast on this day.
Yeah, as a form of reconciliation.
Yeah. Can you imagine that here's Yahweh says, okay, I am personally going to be the sacrificial lamb. I'm going to personally make it possible for you to be a model.
I'm
going to
provide the lamb.
I'm going to provide the lamb. In fact, I am the lamb. And then he's going to say, you know, but really the hard part here is that I'm just, and I want you to be perfect and exonerated. So I'm going to pay the penalty. I'm going to go to the place of separation, and I'm going to pay your entire debt myself. I'm going to be afflicted down there, so you won't have to be. And then on the day before we on this path that we walk into Yahweh's presence, he says, you know, why don't we forget about all that stuff? Now it's time for you to be afflicted. I showed you that I was willing to be afflicted. Now it's your turn. Afflict yourself, and that'll make a big difference, because what I did was not enough. And which now it's time that you add to it. I mean,
no, that's essentially what's being said there. You know, there's we have a new couple in Unpopular Truth.
Uh-huh.
And we've actually got several new people, but Dwana is her name, asked if she said, oh, these translations are so bad, and she went to First Kings where Eliyahu's, you know, making fun of the God that slept in late and so forth. And at the end, when he proves Yahweh is truly, he's the man, they all worshiped. They fell on their face. And she goes, what does it really say? I said, well, yeah, they really fell on their face. But people, you know, you got to think about these things. I mean, sure they did. They'd been trained by Lord Baal. They didn't know Yahweh. He didn't tell them to fall on their face. You didn't see Eliyahu falling on his face, did you? No. He was laughing. He was having a good time. It was all the people who had been trained by Baal fell on their face. And
absolutely.
That's really what we got going on with fasting as opposed to chag, a celebration, you know?
Yeah. By the way, I have a kudo here for you, Larry. There's a woman who wrote me two letters today. Amazing story. She married a Jordanian Muslim and converted to Islam. Along the way, she found a copy of Prophet of Doom and read it. After reading Prophet of Doom, she, in the presence of her family, tossed her Quran in the trash and left Islam. And she has continued to read. She followed the books right into Yada Yah. And she said that if it hadn't been for your willingness, you probably don't even remember this woman, But it was your willingness, Larry, to take Yada Yada and say, because, you know, she's been indoctrinated now in Islam. I mean, Yada Yada is, you know, is like a PhD in God versus a nursery school story, I mean, in the Quran.
Yeah.
And so she's all of a sudden now facing Yada Yada, and it is, it's, I mean, she writes beautifully, so she has a good mind. But she came from a really dark place. And she said, you painstakingly gave enormous amounts of your time to share with her in bits and pieces what each of the statements at Yada Yada actually meant. And she said it was your patience and your willingness to help her understand initially what God was offering that helped her then, after she had left Islam, come to be part of the covenant.
I know who that is.
Pretty special.
It's Bonnie.
Yep.
Yep, that is. That is who that is. Indeed. We'll just leave it with a first name because it's better to be as anonymous as possible. But
and you're right about her being a good writer, and we employ her to do some writing for us now, too, on our website. So.
Oh, okay. Yeah, she's very articulate. She's hard for me to correspond with because when somebody writes as well as she does, it's very difficult to just give a read it, enjoy it, and a quick response, which is what I find myself having to do for me to have any kind of, you know, opportunity away from just sitting here in this chair. And she's way too thoughtful and articulate to
she's a thinker.
Oh,
she
wow.
is a thinker.
Yeah.
Yeah, she lives out in Oklahoma, grows her own food.
Yeah, good memory. All that is true. So Yahweh is saying on this day, do not perform any of the service of the heavenly messenger. Now, on this day, Larry, and maybe this is the first time this has all dawned on me, and if it is, then I apologize for being so slow. But what was the primary service of the Malacca as it relates to the Moed Mikre? What was the primary service provided by the Malacca, the messenger from heaven, that would be Yahusha, as it relates to the Moed Mikre? Guys?
Fulfilling it.
And which two in particular?
The two rough ones would have been Passover and Matzah.
Correct. Yeah. All right. So on this one, he says, do not perform any of the service of the heavenly messenger on this essential and empowering day. Now, was he afflicted?
Yes, he did. He was the one that was afflicted in major ways. Yep.
Right. On both days, right? To the maximum degree.
Absolutely.
You can, I mean, no matter how you define afflict, to abase, to be humbled, to be stricken, I don't care how you define afflict, he was afflicted in the maximum way possible, physical body and soul, on Pesach and Matzah. So when he says on this day, do not perform any of the service of the heavenly messenger on this life-sustaining and empowering day, then might we assume that since he was afflicted on this day, that's the one thing we don't want to do?
Yeah, that would be the work that he did. Right.
Right.
I'm not capable of doing that work. That's
right.
Correct.
And what he's saying is don't even attempt it. Don't afflict yourself because I've already been afflicted. He is announcing that he was afflicted. So don't. There's no reason for us to be afflicted. We ought not to do what he did. First of all, it's stupid. I've used that, you know, the example. I have two examples. One is embarrassing, and I like to embarrass myself, where I was on my first real job, and the owner of the company took the newbie out to his country club for a round of golf and for lunch, and at the end of the round, he bought me a beer, and because I was still in my fraternity at USC, and we had a beer machine where you put a quarter in, you got a beer. I passed him
you
a quarter.
Handed up
I
a quarter.
I passed him a quarter, and he just laughed at me. He said, hey, pal, either pay for the whole thing or don't bother. And I mean, I was really that naive. I was sincere. I thought that was the right thing to do. And you know, I wanted to crawl underneath the bar. But when Yahweh became the Passover lamb, when he allowed his soul to be afflicted and Sheol to ransom us, do you think that Larry or Craig or anybody, James, can do something that's going to amount to a hill of beans? Is that like offering somebody, you know, they just gave you a $1 million home, free and clear, and you say, well, let me give you a buck? I mean, wouldn't you just piss them off?
Well, I think that's what happened kind of with Cain and Abel, wasn't it?
Yeah,
didn't Yahweh provide the lamb?
Yeah.
And the other guy worked this field and used his hands and did all this,
right,
and he made this offering. And, that was something that he did. And he goes, look, you know, all I need somebody to do is dress out a lamb, you know.
Right.
I'm providing it. Yeah.
Right. Yeah. So it is as clear as words allow what Yahweh was offering on this day, the purpose of this day. And you and I know that in Yirmiyah, Yahweh speaks of this day, that the covenant is renewed, it's reaffirmed on this day with Yisrael and with Yehudim. So do not perform any of the service of the heavenly messenger on this life-sustaining and empowering day. Now, I want to draw your attention to Estem. Estem is a word that's not frequently used in the Torah. When Yahweh uses Estem, pay attention. It's the Hebrew word for backbone, for skeleton, for absolutely essential for life. For, you know, if you were to put together a outline of Yahweh's plan, you know, it'd have the seven steps to him. It'd have the five terms and conditions of the covenant. You know, it would have an essential outline that everything makes sense based upon that plan. When God uses a stem, he's serious. You can't stand upright unless you've got a backbone. You can't flesh out a human unless you have a skeleton. A plan has an essential core element to it. This is the most essential day as part of that plan from God's perspective. Because he views himself, okay, yeah, I did Passover. That was my commitment to you. I don't want you to make too big a deal out of it. It's my benefit to you, my gift to you. I did matzah. It's my gift to you. This day, though, is the celebratory day. Why? Because all of it is celebrated on this day. The relationship is reconciled on this day. This is the day that is essential. This is why it was all done. The other thing I want you to keep in mind on a stem. When Yahusha is cited in the Olivet Discourse answering his disciples' questions about his return, he is quoting Zechariah. And in Zechariah, you see the same word, Estem, in reference to this day. He calls it the essential day. Here Yahweh is saying, okay, I want you to pay attention. I'm going to, in the Olivet Discourse, about the timing of his return, he's going to quote Zechariah on the essential day. And when we turn to Zechariah, we're going to find that the day of his return is the essential day. Now I ask you, when Yahweh said that this day, Yom Kippurim, he says, the day of reconciliations, Yom Kippurim, is the essential day. What is the essential day?
Kippurim, the day of reconciliation.
Yeah, it was not a trick question. So really, if you want to know the essential day that Yahweh is going to return, he answered it. He says, I'm going to return on the essential day. He just told us that Yom Kippurim is the essential day. I know that there are a lot of people who are who dismiss everything that I've shared from Yahweh's Torah, prophets, and Psalms, and yada yada, and the introduction to God, because I have told you when he's going to return. And I've told you when he's going to return because he told us. I'm not guessing. I'm not trying to put together a fancy formula. I didn't do any calculations. He told us. So shouldn't we revel in that day, share that day? After all, it is the essential day.
You know, that's one of the big things when I was looking for Yahweh. That was one of the questions I had. I have no question about it now. You know, I mean, I know when. And I know what it's based on. I know it's all about the Yobel.
Yeah.
You know.
It's about the Yobel, and it's about the Mikbray.
Yeah. Yeah.
Is there anything else
combine
to Yahweh?
You got the answer.
Right.
Yep.
And what did he say on this day? The thing that matters most to Yahweh is his covenant, right? So on this essential
right.
day, what is he reconciling? He tells us in Yirmiyah, I am going to reaffirm my covenant.
The covenant. Yeah,
right.
That's what he does.
The only thing that matters.
You see it right in Zechariah. You see
right.
the moment it happens. I have a note.
Right.
On the moment that the covenant is restored and
right.
repaired.
It's on the day of reconciliation. He's coming to reconcile his relationship so he can reaffirm his covenant relationship on the essential day. It makes perfect sense. It's perfect in terms of the timing of the plan, consistent with Yahweh's nature, reaffirmed throughout his Torah, prophets, and Psalms.
And it's huge.
I don't think it's difficult. I really don't think any of this is difficult. He says, so... Do not perform any of the service of the heavenly messenger on this life-sustaining and empowering, this essential and substantive healing and corporeal day. Indeed, this is the day of reconciliations for you to be pardoned and forgiven, kafar, and to approach the presence of Yahweh, your God. Now, when we approach Yahweh, if you take the seven steps of the Moed Mikre, on which of those seven steps do we approach Yahweh?
All of them.
Well, we're coming closer to him, clearly. I mean, but the day that we actually end up camping out in his presence is Sukkah.
Oh, that's Sukkah. Yeah.
Right,
yeah.
That's the destination. Sukkah is camping out with God. We're now in his home, in his realm, camping out with him for all eternity. That's what Sukkah is all about. The Moed Mikre prior to Sukkah is Yom Kippurim. So what are we doing on Yom Kippurim? The relationship.
We're reconciling the relationship.
So we can be pardoned and forgiven. So we can come into the presence of Yahweh, our God. It is a path. After all, it begins with a door that is opened, a threshold that we cross over, a status that we obtain as his children, an enrichment and an empowerment because we are his kids and he doesn't want us to stay as babies forever. What fun would that be in eternity? And then, you know, we take a day, which we took 10 days ago, to go shout for joy. I mean, Larry, I think it's your favorite day of the year, Teruah, which your site renamed Teruah, shout for joy, blare out a warning. Well, now we're at the day of reconciliations. It's the essential day. It's the day that I think of the seven. Well, it's not the one that's most important to you and to me. It is the day that's most important to Yahweh. If I were to prioritize the day that's most important, and God didn't tell us this, so I'm speculating here, and I don't mind if everybody says I'm wrong, but from my perspective, the most important day on the calendar is Matzah. That's the day that we are perfected, so that we can be adopted into Yahweh's family. And while that's the most important, my favorite happens to be Shavuot, the day of enrichment and empowerment and enlightenment and all of that sort of thing. And I, you know, one of our good friends, Don, who listens to this program, joins it quite often, the YHWH-QRA.com site that is so powerful, his favorite is Bukurim, when we're adopted into Yahweh's family. And I've got no issue with everybody having a favorite day. But from Yahweh's perspective, he's calling this one essential. And so from his perspective, this is the substantive day. And he says it over and over again. So this is his favorite day. And this day is more than just us as children of the covenant being reconciled in the relationship, because the moment we're adopted into his family as a benefit of Pesach and matzah and enriched and empowered by him, you know, we're already square with Yahweh. So this day really is the celebration of Yahweh's ultimate promise, where he went to Abraham and Sarah and promised through Yishak and Yaakov, who became Yisrael, to give them all the benefits of the covenant to their descendants. And the only way to do that is to reconcile the covenant relationship at the end with the descendants of Abraham, Yishak, and Yaakov. And so this is the day that Yahweh is honoring that promise. It's a very important celebration for him. So I think this
it's
is
the most awesome day.
Yeah.
It's the most awesome.
And by the way, I could be easily have my arm twisted and say that Sukkah is my favorite because it's celebrating camping out with God. I love the camp out. I really love
definitely
God.
Definitely the one I'm looking forward to the most.
Yeah.
At least the fulfillment.
Yeah. It's kind of silly, I guess. Maybe I'm just embarrassing myself to say, you know, my favorite day of the seven when they're all pretty terrific. But
Teruah is pretty terrific because you're not going through any of the earthly stuff anymore. I mean, you're already out there, you know. It's true.
Yeah.
It's pretty cool. It really is.
Now, is Yahweh okay with us choosing to ignore his instructions, choosing to modify them to our own so that they kind of fit comfortably with us? Can we include Paul and pretend that Paul is speaking for God when God calls him the plague of death? Well, listen to what he says next. This is Kara 23:29. Because any soul, every soul, who by way of relationship, Asher, does not respond to the summons and answer on this life-sustaining, corporeal, and empowering Estem day, these shall be cut off and separated from the family. There, one of two fates awaits those who are separated from the family. The family is the covenant. The family is Yisrael, individuals who engage and endure with God. And if you're separated from the family, James, what's one of the two outcomes?
Well, either death or eternal separation.
Right. Neither one of those sound like a lot of fun to me. So Yahweh is saying here.
I vastly prefer one over the other, but I don't want either one.
Yeah, I've got a. There's a third, and the third is camping out with God, which is the destination of the Moed Mikra. I'm going with door number one personally. But what God is saying here is, I've invited you to meet with me on this essential, life-sustaining, and empowering day. This day that'll give you a backbone so you can stand up in my presence. And I'm going to reconcile my relationship with you so that we can camp out forever. And if you choose to ignore this, if you don't respond to the invitation, I've given you an invitation. If you turn down the invitation, if you ignore the invitation, then your soul should be cut off and separated from the family. I want to ask you guys, is there any wiggle room here? Can you carve out an exemption for me?
No. Well, Paul said, it doesn't matter what day you do anything.
Then Paul would be in absolute conflict with Yahweh. Yahweh says, you don't respond to this invitation and meet with me on this life-sustaining, corporeal, and empowering day, then you're going to be cut off and separated from the family. I think that he can communicate effectively. And if you can conceive DNA and life and create a universe out of your spoken words, then I'm relatively certain that you can convey in words what you mean to say. And I don't see why you can get any conclusion other than you either answer the invitation that Yahweh has offered or you're not part of the family. And if you're not part of the family, you're not going to be saved. I'm all open if somebody's
not. Very clear. I mean, there's no way around this. There's just no way around it. And who wants to be around, to get around it anyway? You know,
right.
I mean, what's wrong with having a celebration today? It's a, kind of a good idea. I like it. You know,
what's wrong
so.
With when the Creator God of the universe invites you to a party attending? How is that a bad idea? I mean,
well, it can't be a bad
idea. Don't know why you would want an exemption. You were just invited by the Creator God of the universe to attend the party, and you're going to say, nah, I got other things to do. I have other people I'd rather be with. Then God said, fine. No big deal. I don't want you in my internal family. So to be separated from, to be cut off from the family is to cease to exist. And any soul who by association performs any of the business of the heavenly messenger on this life-sustaining and empowering day. You're getting the theme that, you know, when Yahweh quotes in Zechariah that he's going to return on the essential life-sustaining day. Is there any question?
He says it too, just like that.
That Yom Kippurim?
Yeah. No question in my mind. I understand he engages. He says... He literally engages on the days of the called out assembly. So he says that.
Right.
In physical form, by the way. He
right.
says though. So.
Yeah, in fact, he's calling this day an Assem day, which means corporeal day.
I know.
Corporeal day.
Yeah, and he can't be corporeal, of course, but he's calling it the corporeal day.
Oriented to the rabbi.
Yeah, I know.
Yeah.
Just
and any soul who by association performs any of the business of the heavenly messenger. That means that you would Paul, for example, claimed that, you know, he completed what God could not do because, you know, Paul's so super. That means if you were afflicting yourself, because that was the business of the heavenly messenger on the Moed Mikre, if you're afflicting yourself, if you're pretending to be God and you're doing God's part of what's required for us to be in this relationship, he's saying... That soul I will annihilate. So he is making, and just in case you thought that the last statement was too subtle, this isn't subtle. And any soul who by association performs any of the business of the heavenly messenger on this life-sustaining and empowering corporeal and essential day, that soul I will annihilate. I will exterminate. Cause to vanish. Be done away with. Destroy. Perish. Ceasing to exist. From the midst of the family. Now, annihilate, when it's God doing the annihilation, that's probably something you don't want. I'm not claiming that my soul is special. It's special to me. It's special to Yahweh. But it ought not be special to anyone else. But, you know, it really is special to me. And I would prefer that God does not annihilate it.
Good plan.
Yeah,
I've always thought you were a good planner. You really do know how to lay out a plan. Good job.
Yeah. So I'm going to go with, I'm going to answer the invitation, and I'm not going to afflict myself on this day because I'd rather continue to be part of the covenant family. And Yahweh is saying, so all of those Jews around the world who are celebrating this day as a fast, which means you really aren't celebrating it, and who are afflicting themselves in some way, themselves trying to earn their way into heaven as opposed to benefit from the work of Yahweh himself, he says, you know, I'm going to annihilate you. I'm going to exterminate
you. That's really essentially either through your good deeds or your good heart or something. You're trying to earn your way to heaven, and that's what can't be done.
Right.
And that's
that's
the delusion of religion.
That's passing the quarter on the bar when someone buys you a beer at a country club.
Yeah,
go. That's what that is. And it's embarrassing. So we now have an affirmation of this. do not perform any part of the business of the Heavenly Messenger. This is an eternal and everlasting, clearly communicated prescription, something that is inscribed, that cuts you into the relationship throughout all time and all generations and all of your assemblies and dwelling places. Okay, James, he said, Olam, here. So, and he also said door. Olam means perpetual and enduring. Door means throughout all time and generations. So, I would have to ask you, how long are we supposed to answer Yahweh's invitation to meet with him on Yom Kippurim?
Just until Paul comes along.
Okay, that's what Paul said.
That's right. Yeah, that's
then
good job.
Start it all.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, you know, he didn't say here, by the way, until there's a New Testament, until there's a gospel of grace, until Paul comes up with a new plan. But beyond that, he didn't even answer this, similar to how Yosha spoke of the Torah. Yosha said that every jot and tittle, the smallest strokes and the smallest letters of the Hebrew words that comprise the Torah, he says that none of them should be annulled so long as the heavens and earth exist. Well, there isn't that caveat here. There isn't. When it comes to this,
yeah, he doesn't
even
say heavens and earth exist. He says for all generations, for all time. That would mean forever.
Forever. So when we're camping out with Yahweh, we're still going to be celebrating these days. Now, I don't know how he's going
to
time them. Yeah, I don't know how he's going to time them in a universe where time no longer flows in an ordinary way. But we're going to be celebrating this forever. Now, I rather like that. I happen to like parties like this, you know. Methinks that the way this is going to work out is that while we're off all exploring and having a great time in the universe, and particularly checking out so many of the life forms and marvelous aspects of creation, I think that Yahweh is going to call us all together as a big family to sing, to dance, to eat really fine food, to drink really good wine, to bask in the warmth of a raging campfire in his presence, celebrating the essential nature of this family. And I think he's going to do it on a regular basis. That sounds like fun.
You know, and again, you know, I want to point out, you know, you have all the Moed Mikra, and he prescribes what you're to eat on Pesach, and what you're not to eat on Matzah.
Right.
But that's it. Other until he gets into the fulfillment of Kippurim, and he points out they eat food in Jerusalem. I mean, come on, guys.
Yeah.
That's
yeah.
the fulfillment day, and they're
right.
eating food in Jerusalem.
Right.
They're
right.
not fasting.
That's correct.
You know? Yeah, no, I mean, he went out of his way to point that out. He doesn't tell you what to eat on Teruah. He doesn't mention if you eat or you don't eat or whatever you're doing. It's a chag, it's a party, so I assume you're eating. But, you know, that same thing with Bikurim, same thing with Shabuah. He doesn't tell you what to eat, but he goes out of his way to talk about how they're eating during in the narrative, showing the fulfillment of Kippurim and Zechariah. You know, we're on sound ground here, not fasting and afflicting ourselves and so forth. The only people doing the afflicting in the narrative are the enemy.
If you're afflicting yourself, then you are precluding your inclusion into the family. Yeah, yeah, I was
think
really
that's true
on that. And I'm really certain what Anah means. And it means to answer and respond. And that makes perfect sense in connection with an invitation. So there are places where I've made assumptions based upon the history and the meaning of words where I feel a need to lay it all out there and make myself vulnerable. and so that you know you ought to really figure this out for yourself. These are my thoughts, and here's the reasons. In this particular case,
you didn't have to work at that.
I'm not telling you to worry about it. I'd still, you know, always encourage everyone to enjoy their own translations because it's a wonderful thing to do. But now this is sound. Do not perform, Asha, any part of the business of the Heavenly Messenger. This is an eternal and everlasting olam. Clearly communicated prescription. It is inscribed so as to cut you into the relationship. It's a chukka. Now, I want you to think about something here. There are four words that Dode uses speaking of the Torah that he says are essential to focus on. One of those
choke
four words
is one of them.
Choke, right. And the
that's
feminine
the
of choke
right
is chukka. Yeah, and there it is right here. So when Yahweh calls this day an everlasting choke or chukka, because it's feminine in this particular case, is that identifying for us something that Dode was encouraging us to focus on?
Mm-hmm.
So
and
that means
chukka,
that,
I suppose
that means that the day of reconciliations is the essence of choke, or the essence of that which was inscribed to cut us into the relationship, and is an important aspect of the Torah to focus on.
Why do you suppose you went with the feminine chukka? Because it's nurturing.
It's because each when you're using a Hebrew descriptive term, it's got to agree with the subject, and so he's talking about the malacca, which is the business of the Heavenly Messenger. Malak is the masculine word for Heavenly Messenger. Spiritual Messenger is malak. When you add the I don't want to pretend here that I am a Hebrew scholar. I'm just telling you that most of the time when the ah is added, like the ah at the end of Yahweh's name, makes that second person standing feminine. So it really is Abraham and Sarah. The ah at the end of Malak just makes Malak feminine. And so
yeah, that's why I think it's the Kodesh, Ruach.
Right, and so this clearly communicated prescription, that which is etched in stone that cuts us into the relationship here, is feminine here, just as the Heavenly Messenger is feminine, and therefore it's the set of parts spirit. Ruach Kodesh, the set of parts spirit.
Yeah, he even says in the narrative there that the people covered in her, they're not going to melt. Everybody else is.
Right.
You know, during the fulfillment. Yeah.
Yeah. So that's why it's feminine. You know, there are times where, you know, masculine and feminine don't mean a lot in the Torah, Prophets, and Psalms. But there's places where...
I think this one does.
This one does.
I think it does.
Yeah, this one does.
Yeah.
Okay, so it's eternal and everlasting. It's a chukka, so it's an instruction which cuts us into the relationship that is inscribed throughout all time and all generations. Throughout all time, all generations, door would mean same thing is true for Gentiles, goyim, as it is for Yehudim. It would mean that you do this if you're in Yisrael, you do this if you're not in Yisrael. Do this if you're in a physical form, you do this if you're a spiritual being.
All dwelling places.
All dwelling all for all times. And all of your assemblies and dwelling places, Moshab. All of your households, all of your settlements, in every location, in every situation. All right? So, that's Yahweh's presentation. Now, he goes on to say, it is for you a time to rest and reflect. So, he's telling you, don't do the malacca work. Why? Because it's your time to rest and reflect. It's a Shabbaton observance. It's a celebration of the promise of the seventh day. And your soul, nefesh, should respond to the invitation and answer the call. Anah. So, this particular day, it's a Shabbat, but even if it wasn't, it's a Shabbaton. And Shabbaton means that you treat whatever day of the week it is as if it were a Shabbat. That's what you do. And
which is lovely.
It's lovely. It's time to rest and reflect on the relationship. A time to recognize that we're not doing anything on this day, which means you ought not be afflicting yourself, because it's the day that we celebrate what Yahweh has done. Now, it is, we've spent a lot of time talking about the uniqueness of Yahweh and how he is indeed the perfect God. That he's a God approachable and humble who leads by example. He could just say, I'm God, you're going to do it my way, and don't ask me any questions. Or he could get down on his knees, lift us up, himself blaze the path for us to follow that leads to him. He could himself do all of the work as Dad to lift us up, to make him approachable. And that's what he chose to do.
Clearly, he chose the latter.
He did.
He would.
And that's marvelous.
He kept his word.
Yeah. I don't know what is. I mean, a humble God who is willing to do all of the hard work so that we can enjoy a relationship with him reminds me of a perfect father.
Yeah, well, let's talk about taking the edge off, because all the religious material has, you know, a Lord breathing fire at you, basically.
Mm-hmm.
And it's the exact opposite, all of it. Even the getting on. I had somebody accuse me of saying, well, you're saying he's kneeling down in front of us. I said, I'm not saying any such thing. I said he kneels down for us. He's
right.
Bending down to help us. And I bring out 20 verses and show him where
course.
He says
yeah.
it.
Right.
You know. And that's a big difference from kneeling in front of us. I mean, they always have to twist everything, you know.
Yeah.
And, of course, that's why they're twisted. That's why they're
down,
kneeling down.
And standing up, we have a comment in the from Deborah in the chat room. And it says righteousness equals right standing with Yah. And it does, literally. The Hebrew word for righteousness, tzedak, means to be right and to stand upright. So to be right with God is to stand upright in his presence. That's the definition of the Hebrew word for righteous and upright is tzedak. So it's a time to rest and reflect, a Shabbaton observance, and your soul should respond to the invitation and answer the call, Anah. Now, the 32nd verse of the 23rd chapter of Korah continues with, in the ninth of the month, in the evening, from sundown until sunset, you should consistently observe, consider, and actually focus upon your Shabbat. So, recognize the role of the Shabbat, of God's promise, of what 6 plus 1 equals 7, where 1 is the oneness of God, and 6 is the nature of man coming together. That's God's promise. And, you know, the day is from sunset to sundown, and he wants us on this day to shamar. And he's saying, shamar your Shabbat, to observe the Shabbat. Now, to observe it doesn't mean to keep it, doesn't mean to do it. Shamar means to think about it, to examine it, to focus on it, to use your ability to be aware of what something means, and then to act upon it. Shamar. So, it is a day to think a lot about what Kippurim means. Now, Just a little journey into to some other statements, which I think highlight the purpose of this day, and we don't have a lot of time left, but to the degree we do. Hear the word which Yahweh proclaims to you, O household of Yisrael. Yahweh says, do not walk in the ways of the Goyim nations, and do not teach the signs and symbols from the skies, for the Gentiles are confused and destroyed by them. For the customs and traditions of the foreign nations are delusional. They cut down trees from the forest, the work of their hands with an axe. They decorate it with silver and gold. They fasten it down so that it will not totter over. Their trees are like finely decorated cultic objects. They can't speak. They cannot walk. They must be carried. Don't revere them. Indeed, from them there is nothing beneficial. There is none like you, Yahweh. You are powerful, and you and your great personal and proper name is mighty. Who would not revere you? Indeed, it is your due. For in all of the wise men in Gentile nations and all of their empires, there is none like you. They are altogether stupid and foolish in their doctrines and teaching of delusional idols made of decorated trees. Pretty clear differentiation between what it means to be part of Yahweh's family and what religions teach. Then we move to Zechariah. This will be Zechariah 1, 2, and 3 first. Yahweh was displeased and separated himself from your fathers because of their discord and their dissension. So say to them that this is what Yahweh intends. Yahweh promises, return, shub, turn around, change your attitude and perspective and come back to God. And Yahweh prophetically declares that I will restore and renew you, says Yahweh. So, very clear, according to God, his children rebelled. They turned away from him. They disassociated from him. So God has put out an invitation. Turn around. Change your perspective. Return to me. And he says, Yahweh says, I will restore and renew you. There is no renewed covenant. There is no New Testament. But there is renewal. And all you have to do to find it is to turn your back on religion and walk to Yahweh along the path that he has provided. Do not be like your fathers, he says. So this idea that we should honor our fathers obviously is moot. Do not be like your fathers, to whom the former prophets spoke to and summoned. This is what Yahweh says. Please, now, I beg you. Return and be restored from your immoral ways and your disagreeable and displeasing endeavors. But they did not listen. They did not hear or respond to me, declares Yahweh. Pretty sad, isn't it? God is telling us and has told us for so long, you know, walk away. Turn your back on religion. Come to me. Don't engage in the terrible ways, the confused ways of the Gentiles. Just walk to me, and I'll restore you. But they did not listen. The prophetic pronouncement from Yahweh's word concerning Yisrael, Yahweh, who spread out the universe, who established the earth, and who conceived and fashioned the spirit inside of Adam, predicts. So those are pretty good credentials. You know, if you're looking for credentials, this pronouncement is from Yahweh, who just happens to be God. He is the living embodiment of his word. That he spread out the universe. That he established the earth. That he conceived and fashioned the spirit inside of humankind, of Adam. So we might want to listen to what he has to say. He said he predicts, this is 12:1. Behold, I am preserving Jerusalem by causing it to be a bowl for all of the family around whose barriers there is reeling and staggering. The gift or the swift siege against Jerusalem will also be a siege against Yehuda. So in the last days, Israel is going to be besieged. We're told that in Yeshayah. There'll be millions of Muslims who flood into Israel. But God's going to create a protective bowl in Jerusalem. It shall be on this day for all the family that I shall cause Jerusalem to be a burdensome, immovable stone. All who try to lift it and carry its people and property away will lacerate themselves. So all Gentile nations of the world will be divided and wounded. God is telling us that Jerusalem is the place that he is not going to allow those who would try to bring Israel down. He's not going to allow them to succeed. So all of the world's leaders who told Israel, don't build homes in Jerusalem, just yesterday.
Yeah.
Not God's. God is saying, build homes there. That's your home. Build homes there. That's the place that I'm going to protect. Build homes there. The world's leaders are saying, oh, it's an abomination that you're building homes there. On this day, Yahweh declares prophetically, I will strike every fast-moving and flying weapon of war and confuse the drivers, causing them to be irrational. Now, it's pretty hard to dismiss that as being prophetic and being accurate. We're speaking of a time that didn't exist until quite recently, but that is precisely what God's going to do. He's going to confuse them, to blind them, to bring them down, to stop them. Near the family
it's
and
only
household.
In the last 100 years you could even have weapons flying with drivers in them.
Right.
In the very generation he's talking about, this battle going down, the battle of Mogi Down, this is it.
This is it. That's only in the, in fact, even less than 100 years that this could
yeah,
have.
Yeah, I mean, that's it. I mean,
yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. The last generation.
You couldn't have it. Yeah.
Yeah. Near the family and household of Yehuda, I will keep my eyes open, and judgmentally, I will strike every army and fast-moving and flying weapon of war with disorientation and blindness. All he has to do is... with a EMP, disable their GPS satellites, and there is blind
done,
in that.
Right there.
Right there.
That's right.
And he has enough energy to do it.
Those
who love Yehuda and are related family and close friends shall say in their hearts, those who live and remain in Jerusalem are supported and empowered by Yahweh, their God, and his conscripts who assist. That's going to be the enclave on this day of God. That's the place you want to be. You want to be family in Jerusalem. No matter how many idiots are trying to destroy Jerusalem, that is the cool place to be on this day. If you want to be in the right place with the right person at the right time, be in Jerusalem on this day. In that day, I will cause, this is what we're talking about here, is the fulfillment of Yom Kippurim. So that's why we turn to Zechariah. In that day, I will cause those who love Yehuda, who are related family and close friends, to be a container of fire surrounded by wood, a flaming torch along the stalks of fallen grain, devouring to the right and to the left all of the armies beneath and surrounding Jerusalem, and Jerusalem shall continue to be inhabited. Now we've come to the end of our normal time. There's a few more statements that Yahweh makes on this day that in the that while we're still being recorded, Larry and James, I'd like to go ahead and cover them because most people listen to the archives of this program. Yahweh will rescue and deliver Yahuda's households, the first, so that the splendor of the house of Dod and the splendor of the inhabitants of Jerusalem will not be greater than Yehuda. So this is the day that God's going to come to rescue and deliver. He's going to do this in person, to rescue and deliver, to reconcile his covenant relationship. On that day, Yahweh will protect Jerusalem on behalf of its inhabitants. The least capable among them on that day shall be like Dod. The house of Dod shall be like God, like messengers, envoys, and representatives in Yahweh's presence. It'd be pretty cool to be like Dod, wouldn't it? I'd sign up for that. And it will come about.
I'll take that one.
Yeah, I'll come out. Yeah, can you imagine being that smart and that loved by Yao? And it will come about in that day that I will investigate and be judgmental of all of the goyim, of the Gentiles, destroying those who come against the Most High's Jerusalem. Yeah, you know, he's, you notice here, he's not trying to protect the Vatican. He's not interested in protecting Washington, D.C.
You
will find him in Mecca.
Yeah.
Yep. You know, this is there's no interest in London here. No Gay Paris.
Yeah.
Right? He is protecting and interested in the only place he's ever protected and been interested in. Jerusalem.
Yep. That's right.
Yeah.
That's right.
And I will pour out on the household of Dode, of love, and on the inhabitants of Jerusalem, the spirit of acceptance, of chin, of favor, of mercy. Whoever pleads for mercy, takonim. So the reason that those in Jerusalem are going to be reconciled in the covenant relationship on this day is that Yahweh is pouring out on the household of Dode, on the children of Yisrael, on the inhabitants of Jerusalem, the Ruach, the spirit of acceptance and favor, who pleads for mercy. And they will
a little bit of that.
Yeah, and this is such a powerful line. Zachary,
yeah, this is a hard one to get around, by the way. If you're a rabbinic Jew, this is going to be rough. So
this is rough.
Hold
so
on
they
to your
will
seat
look
here.
So they will look. They will observe, consider, and regard. They will pay attention to, understand, and respond appropriately to, gazing upon me, whom by association they pierced, thrust nails through, mourning as one wails for an only begotten son, grieving bitterly over him as one suffers anguish over a firstborn. Yep. You
yeah, that's a hard one to get around. I don't see how they do. What do they do? Completely rewrite that in the Masoretic?
Yeah, they did. They talked about lion's paws in this particular case.
Psalm 22, lions at my feet.
Yeah, same nonsense.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Please.
Yeah.
Oh,
so
boy.
They will look upon me, whom by association they pierced. I'm pretty aware of a day that they pierced him. That would be Passover, year 4,000 Yah. This is Yom Kippurim, year 6,000 Yah.
And we got lions mauling hands and so forth again.
Yeah, there you go.
This is crazy. I even had a guy tell me, he was Jewish. He goes, there is no word in Hebrew for for pierced. I said, well, I don't know if there is now or not, but there was then. I said, as an example, how do you pierce your 12 loaves of bread on Shabbat? How do you do that?
Yeah, well, the Hebrew word dakar, D-A-Q-A-R, means to pierce.
Yeah.
That's all it means. Yeah. It means to pierce, to drive a nail through. In the day, Yom, that he is great, Gadol, exalted, honored, glorified, magnified, the shouts in Jerusalem will be like the wailing of Hadad Rimnon in the valley of Megiddo. You ever heard of a place called Megiddo? How about Armageddon?
Yeah, Armageddon, you mean?
Yeah. Oh, yeah, that's the one.
Moggy down.
Yeah. And so what Yahweh was saying is that the victors on this day, during the Battle of Armageddon, are going to be those who look upon Yahweh as the one that they pierce and recognize him as you would recognize an only child. And they're the ones that are going to be celebrating in this day. So he ties it right into Megiddo. It brings me back to this conclusion that Yosha didn't say anything that wasn't already in the Torah, Prophets, and Psalms. And so when he was talking about Armageddon, he was speaking of this day, of what happens in the valley of Megiddo. The world's people and nations shall mourn. families by themselves, the house of Dode by themselves, the families from the house of Nathan by itself, the wives by themselves. And I will pour out on the household of Dode, that would be all of Israel, on the inhabitants of Jerusalem, the spirit of acceptance, who pleads for favor. On that day there shall be a source opened for the household of Dode and the inhabitants of Jerusalem concerning the offer to purify and cleanse sin and corruption. That's what we mean by a day of reconciliation. That is what God is going to do on our behalf. This is the fulfillment of the Day of Reconciliations, of Yom Kippurim.
Yeah, we're about to see the exact moment that happens, actually.
Yeah, we're not only are we getting close, but we are particularly close to our exit from planet Earth. You know, and it's going to require less work of Yahweh to take me out of here now that I'm lighter.
Good deal. Yeah.
Just kidding, obviously, because it's just souls that are going on this journey. Physical bodies would be a liability. But I would like to, my preference would be to live to this day of the harvest. I think that would be special. I would really like to be part of this harvest. I mean, if you're not, you know, you're all going to meet up at the same place anyway, but I think it'd be fun to be.
Oh, yeah. You mean to have a supernaturally walk up and say, come with me?
Yeah.
You know, even though I know it's coming, it's almost shocking. I'd be shocked.
Yeah.
You know, wouldn't you? I mean, even though you know it's coming.
Yeah. You mentioned somebody falling down before God, and while I'm going to at all costs try to avoid that, I mean, it is going to be a jolt to the system. I know it. I understand it.
Oh, yeah.
I'm looking forward to it. But still, having the creator of the universe and all of his splendor saying, you, my friend, my son, come here. You and I are going on a great journey together. I am so happy to have you here. That's speechless. I mean, tears of joy.
Well, that's knees shaking kind of stuff. I mean, it is. But,
exactly.
You know, it is what
marvelous.
It is.
Marvelous. I'm looking forward to the fulfillment of this day. And then, you know, we'll all celebrate 1,000 years on Sukkah. Starting five days later, and we get to see the transformation of a very corrupt and polluted, bloody earth into the conditions experienced at the Garden of Eden. And that will be exciting. And then I think we have 1,000 years to go off and explore the existing universe before we witness the creation of a new one. Yeah, can't wait. Happy
and that one will be for all primary, just really spiritual beings, so it's going to be even more awesome. It's going to be like a real wow.
Yeah.
I mean, they are all going to be, but, you know, I don't know what to say. I mean, you know, if you can imagine it, you can do it kind of thing.
Exactly.
Wow.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
And your guide through all of this, your instructor through all of this, is the creator of the universe. The guy that created it all is going to be the guy that says, your guide. You know, sign me up, man. Sign me up. Can't wait. And from beginning to end, this is a beautiful story, beautifully told by a beautiful individual. And the smartest thing that any of us can do is respond and accept his invitation to meet with him.
And by the way, anybody that just listened to this, you have to understand this is all happening in Jerusalem. So
Correct. Real
Jews are in Jerusalem, just as Yahweh said they would be called back in the last generation.
Yes.
This is not magic. This is called after World War II.
Right.
They began repopulating Israel.
Yeah. Yes, exactly as he said they would. And
yes.
Those are the children of Israel. Those are the descendants of Abraham and Sarah, of Jacob, and of Yishak. That's who they are.
Yeah, I just get forever tired hearing, well, those aren't the real Jews. Well, then was Yahweh wrong? I had one person tell me, well, that's just a spiritual metaphor. I said, no, he's seriously telling you exactly where he's going to land and exactly who his people are. And they're right there in Jerusalem. Like it or don't like it, that's the way it is. Yeah.
Yeah, mm-hmm. Correct. Correct.
We might want to read the part where the reconciliation takes place. That would be very apropos, don't you think?
Yeah, absolutely. Where he's talking about actually reconciling his relationship with Israel.
Yeah, I'll read it. It shall come to exist in the whole of the land, prophetically predicts Yahweh. 2/3 shall be cut off and die, and 1/3 shall be spared. Now, that's something to think about, because we see a lot of excitement from the Jewish community every time a little battle's won.
Yes.
By the time this is over, it's not going to be that exciting to go through that 7 years. It's going to be horrible. 2/3 dead, no matter how you cut the pie.
Right.
And I will return to this 1/3. In the fire, I will refine them as one refines silver and test them as one does gold. They will summon my personal and proper name, which is what? Yahweh. Instead of Hashem or G-D, and I will answer them. And I will say, you are my people, and they will say, Yahweh is our Elohim. And that's the way it's going to be. So out of the Holocaust, Israel is restored, and out of the ashes of Armageddon, the Yehudim are reunited with Yahweh.
Yep, and that was the Zechariah 13:9. 14:1 reads, mm-hmm. Behold, open your eyes and see, Yahweh's day of return is coming. Who's coming? Yahweh. Behold, look up, open your eyes and see, Yahweh's day of return is coming. I'm ready. Could happen. Could happen to, you know, it's not, this is not 6,000 Yah, so it's not going to happen tonight, but will happen in 2033, which is your 6,000 Yah. But clearly, I'm ready, you're ready. A marvelous celebration, a promise fulfilled. Well, Larry, James, thank you guys. I'm going to go off and celebrate, have a celebratory dinner, not fasting. I'm going to celebrate my relationship. My soul is answering the invitation. I'm happy to be part of the family.
Well, enjoy.
Yeah, me too.
Yeah, good night, my friends. God bless you all.
Good night.